Hello, welcome to My Opening Line. I'm Keith and the girls, Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda.
You know what this show is about. It's the origin stories of comedians. What got them going? What got them started? Was it something good? Was it something bad?
What kept them going? Why would they?
I always use this as an example. Why did I get into podcasting? It was because of bad podcasts. I said, no, this cannot be the movement. We have to do something different. Make sure you're subscribed to Laughable, by the way. Laughable.com. It's an app where, sure, you subscribe to a podcast, as you already do, but now you can subscribe to the person.
For example, our guest doesn't have their own podcast. They might be the last comic who doesn't, but they do guest on other people's podcasts. So you can actually follow them by going to Laughable and just clicking on their name. And then if they pop up on other podcasts, yeah, you can. And that's our guest who doesn't know how to speak his turn. He's
he's been on shows and stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, yeah. Jesse Joyce.
That's me. Hello, everyone.
You know, Raider for the Oscars, 2 years. Those Comedy Central roasts that hurts people's feelings, 12 times.
12 times.
Holy shit. Jimmy Kimmel Live rating for that now. But where did it start? That's what we're going to find out today.
Right.
All right.
How long ago did you start?
I started in 1998. So it's 20 years now. Yeah.
And when you started, you were drinking.
I wasn't even because I was younger than that. So I didn't start drinking until I turned 21. The first like few years I was sober just cause I was like a kid. I was 17, 18 or whatever. And then, then once I turned 21, I started drinking.
Was that a conscious choice or 21? Now I found out about this world.
I kind of didn't want to like break the rules kind of thing, right. You know? And then also I have a history of alcoholism in my family. So I was like kind of aware of it.
Okay.
So I remember in college saying all the time, like, oh no, I can't drink. Like I have a history of alcoholism in my family, you know? So, and then ironically, like I turned 21, I turned into a fucking alcoholic immediately.
Right. Is it your dad or is it the skip a generation thing?
Yeah. Oddly, my dad is kind of the black sheep of the family for not having ever had an alcohol problem, but like his parents and, you know, his brothers, they're all sober now, it was all my dad's side of the family.
Yeah, I know both my grandfathers were bad drunks.
Uh-huh.
And my mom and my dad do not drink at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was because they were like traumatized by it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
they're like anti-booze. They won't have it at parties.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's stories that I never hear the whole thing. You know, you just know it was a bad.
And then they trail off and cry.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know for sure. Yeah. Like my grandma was sober in my adult life when I was a drunk right before she died. Like she told me a whole bunch of like sober shit. Right. I think just because she knew that I was drunk, you know.
Yeah.
And then I got a DUI like a month after she died and got sober. So
that was her.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So
do you think we should give kids booze because they're going to hate it?
Yeah.
And not know about mixes. And then they'll just know in their head, no, alcohol's for fucking assholes. It tastes like shit.
That's funny because going to Al-Anon, I also hear AA stories, which are amazing. And it turns out you could start drinking at 10 and it clicks right with you if you have the disease.
Oh, yeah?
And you're way into it like right away.
Well, my parents used to give me like, you know, whiskey to help me go to sleep sometimes, you know, like.
But that's they shouldn't. Good. But you don't give a fifth.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
You poured it yourself as a handle.
I did.
Under
yeah,
your bed.
It was. Yeah, I put it on cereal.
So, what made you start doing stand up?
I always what I wanted to do since I was a kid.
Wow, like, why?
Because my uncle did stand up for a few years in the 80s, and I was like 10 or 11, and it was like kind of a very impressionable age. And I literally thought it was the coolest shit that I could imagine doing. Because it was kind of like at the height of when stand-up, the first sort of boom in the 80s or whatever. And so my uncle was an actor and like an entertainer. He was a clown in Ringling Brothers for a bunch of years and shit when I was a kid. And so then in addition to all that stuff, he started doing stand-up like out on the West Coast. And he just sent me, I found that out and talked to him about it. That was the coolest. And then he sent me a tape of him doing it. Like he was like an open micer, you know what I mean? But I thought that it was the fucking greatest thing ever. I've literally physically ruined the VHS tape because I watched it so many times. Yeah.
Did you love his comedy? Did you just like that he was?
I was just delighted by it. Like, yeah. And I do remember thinking it was funny. He did like an impression of like Bob Dylan ordering a cheeseburger at McDonald's or something.
How would he do it?
Like, I just remember it was like it had something to do with, he had to like, he did this like to pot, like reach the counter because Bob Dylan was tiny, right? He
like a mime.
Pretended like a mime because he had a clown. He went to clown college. So he had like that. So he was like really physical about it or whatever. And so he like kind of peered up because Bob Dylan's little.
Right.
And then it was something like, I'd like a cooter pander with cheese, please. It was something stupid like that. But
you knew this was a job.
But yeah, but I was like, fuck, that's the coolest. And that was the other thing too, is like, I feel like a lot of comics, when you talk to them, they dick around in some stupid job for a few years after college or whatever, and then get into stand-up. But mostly because they think to themselves, like, well, who does stand-up? How the fuck would you do that? You know? But because I had a family member who'd done it, it was like a job option when I was like 11, you know?
Where were you born? Where are you at age 11?
Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I grew up in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
So to me, it was like I made that decision then. Like, I remember there's actually like an article, like our seventh grade class or whatever was like interviewed or something, you know, like what do the kids want to do with their lives or something? And I said, be a stand-up comedian.
You know, what's funny is he had that voice in seventh grade. He's like, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian. They were really worried.
Well, and then it said like, it was like, I forget. It was like a questionnaire we had to fill out or something. And it was, what's your happiest moment in life? And I said, telling a funny joke. Aww. That's what I said. Yeah.
So, that was a terrible answer, but you're so really cute.
Really douchey, but I was 11. So.
Right. And then how old are you? Do you know the rules? Meaning, do you know, okay, everybody starts at open mics. I'll look into that. Comedians don't just make things up. You have to write things. Did you know this?
I mean, I watched a lot of stand-up, but like when I could, you know? And I remember being like annoying to friends of mine as a kid, like when I was like 13 and we'd go over to like sleepovers and they'd want to like, when their parents went to bed, they'd want to watch like Skinamax or whatever, you know, where you could see boobs. But on HBO, there'd be like a comedy special. And I would like always argue with my friends because I wanted to watch George Carlin or whatever, you know? But yeah, so basically I knew you had to be 18 to get into a comedy club. That's what I like. So more or less I showed up when I was like 17 to the Pittsburgh Funny Bone when I was in college and started bar backing there. Okay. And more or less they hired me to like be the janitor bar back. So I used to like scrub out the urinals with like a rubber gloves and shit.
Do you know it's a trick? Like, I'm going to pretend to work here, and you're honestly doing work, but I'm going to pretend to work here. And then one day.
Yeah. 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 Well, no, I mean, I think they knew that I wanted to do stand up too, but, incidentally that job is like when I first started, you know, is the reason to this day, like it occurs to me, like if I have gum in my mouth and I want to throw it away, I'm in a urinal, like my instinct, everybody's instinct is like, I'll just throw it. And then I never do. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, don't throw gum in a urinal. Cause I know for sure someone has to fucking pick it out. Right. You can't flush it. Cause that's what I used to do all the time, is like pick gum out of the urinal. It's a Pittsburgh Funny Bone.
Throw gum in the urinal?
Yeah, there's always gum sitting at the bottom of the urinal. And some dickhead who never had to pick gum out of a urinal doesn't know that.
Some literal dickhead.
Yeah, yeah. That's very true. So I, as soon as I basically was old enough, when I was working there for a few months, I started going to the open mic.
When did you start writing?
I mean, I was like writing like funny shit, like sketches with my friends and stuff, like then when I was like 11 or whatever. Like, I hadn't started to like, I didn't know how to assemble an act, but I had like jokes when I was a kid, like that were like kind of old standbys, you know?
What's an early one you remember?
I feel like the very first joke I ever wrote when I was like 6 or 7 or something, it was Valentine's Day, and I would go around, we got little stickers, and I would tell everybody I had a heart on. Right? And
you knew what that was at 6?
Crushed. Maybe 7 or 8, like, but I was like third grade is like when you know what a heart, but it fucking killed with like the other third graders, you know. Oh, but actually even before then, I remember like my whole life it's always like oh, you know what'd be funny to do right now or whatever, you know. That's like always been my sort of impulse. And when I was in first grade, we I went to Catholic school, and we had to change for gym, so we were all the boys were in the bathroom changing for gym. And there was a folding chair in the bathroom. And so I had that thought. I was like, oh, you know, it'd be hilarious. And so I announced to everybody, I was like, everyone stand back. and I set the chair up across the room from the urinal, like very far away. And I got up on the thing and I was like,
on the chair?
Yeah, on the chair. And I was like making it seem like I was going to piss into the urinal from across the room, right. Like flat out knowing I wasn't going to be. And like everybody's like, kind of like, there's no way. And then I just literally started pissing on the floor right in front of the chair and it fucking crushed. Like everyone in the room thought it was so funny. And then I vividly remember this eighth grader came in, and to this day, it still puzzles me why this happened. But this eighth grader came in and he was like, get down from there. And he like grabbed me off the chair and took me to the principal's office.
Wow. What a dork.
Yeah. And I like in high, like at the time I was terrified because he was like an authority figure. But like an eighth grader is like fucking 12 or whatever, right. 13. Like, why did this kid do that? Like, I still don't understand why, but he took me to the principal's office and like fucking told on me. He was like the hall guy or whatever the fuck. Anyway.
Did you ever look him up? Because he's got to be miserable.
I literally heard he's dead.
Whoa.
Yeah. So anyway, but
he told on the wrong person.
Yeah. I didn't.
Snitches get stitches. Yeah.
What you put out in the universe. Yeah.
But that fucking like, oh, you know what'd be funny to do right now? That always like, that has like gotten me in trouble like over the years a lot. And this literally happened yesterday. Monday. Or whatever day it is. I'm jet lagged.
It recently happened.
Whatever day I flew in here was Saturday. Okay. Sunday. Whatever. It was Sunday morning. Fuck. Right. No. Okay. I know it exactly.
Being a comedian, it's all about word economy.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I know. So what happened was I flew out Saturday in the late afternoon. So we were supposed to arrive at like 11 p.m. in New York.
Okay.
And then I was just going to go to the hotel and have Sunday off. We were stuck on the runway at LAX for like literally an hour because of this weird thing that happened. And the pilots were like flabbergasted by this because this has like never happened before. But apparently somebody put a shipment of fish into the hull where the baggage hold, and it broke apart.
Oh.
And so there were fish everywhere.
Wow.
And they were explaining to the passengers as incredulously as I am currently doing it to you. They're like, right. You guys aren't going to believe this. There's a bunch of fish in the... So we have to unload all the bags and we have to clean out.
I would think I was on camera.
Yeah.
Like, okay, sure.
Yeah. But the nice thing is when you fly, you're writing for a TV show, they fly you business class. So, and I didn't have my wife and child, and it was like, oh, I get to watch movies. Like, so I like literally couldn't have cared but everyone else was like really annoyed that this was holding them up. But I didn't have anything to do that night. And I just was like, this is the perfect time for a flight to be late. So I just like sat back and fucked off and watched movies. But they would keep coming on the intercom while I was watching this movie. And the vibe was everyone else was very annoyed. Mm-hmm. And they kept coming on like, oh, you guys, this, I apologize. This fish thing is taking longer than we thought. We've now cleaned the cabin. We're going to load the bags back on, but, it's still going to be another 20 minutes to get all these fish off the runway. Like that's how he kept talking about it. Anyway. So we land an hour late in New York and I go to baggage claim and we're all standing around. Everybody was on the plane and I look desperately for somebody I know who like from the show who was on, but there's no one else there.
Right.
And I had that. I was like, oh, you know, it'd be funny. And so I had to say it to the lady who was sitting next to me on the plane because I didn't know anyone else. And I just turned to her and I go, hey, I really hope my shipment of fish is okay. And she got like legit mad. She was like, that was you? Like, she was like super pissed. It was like, lady, you sat next to me the whole time. Like, did I seem worried about my, she's like, you, what the fuck? Anyway, my point is that has happened my entire life.
Right.
So
can't help yourself.
Yeah.
When they finally let you go on stage.
Yeah.
Do you pester them? Like, how about today?
Yes, but it just occurred to me that I did, while I was trying to like get in with the funny bone before, that was not my first show. My first show that I did was like 2 months before that. I had a friend who was in a band and he knew I wanted to do stand up. This is like my sophomore, junior year of college.
Okay.
And he was like, do you want to come open for my band? And I was like, fuck yeah. So I basically... But here's the crazy part is I feel like I told you this on the other show before, but
it's a rock band.
Yeah, it's a rock band.
You mentioned the other show.
I'm going to keep telling my story. It's a rock band called Mercury. I don't think they're still a band anymore, but at the time. And so I was like, yeah, I'd love to do stand up. And he was like, great. And he's like, well, because none of us knew how to, he was like, well, how much stand up do you want to do? And right. I was like, I don't know how much stand-up is done. Like, how much stand-up do people do? And we were like, he was like, you want to do a half hour? And
oh,
I was like,
Jesus.
Yes, that sounds like a very reasonable amount of time. So like, that was it. My very first show was a half hour long. And I've never done stand-up in my life.
How'd it go?
It went, in my mind, it didn't go badly. I'm sure it was a disaster. But like, everybody was cool because like, they were kind of mutual friends, you know, like most of the people that were there. But
do you
remember
the kind of jokes that you were telling?
Well, the other thing is like, I remember I had to memorize it, you know, like I was like drilling it for like a week, like to memorize a half hour of fucking jokes. And I do remember at one point I forgot jokes and I ended up having to like riff on the sink in the bathroom for some reason. I don't remember what I was, but it was a fucking really awkward hole that I dug myself into.
Do you remember the first joke you officially told?
I don't remember like literally the one I opened with. I don't remember that. But the joke I remember that worked, that I have a theory that every person who does stand up, if they do it professionally, they have one joke when they were brand new that floated them. The one joke that like the comedy gods sort of gave you that like led you to believe like I can keep doing this. Like, cause you clung to that only joke that was good, you know, and you would sit there and go like, how do I write more like that one or whatever, you know? And so I had like a joke that actually made it into like the first few years of comedy, you know, that I had did the first night. And it's really dumb, but it's about how fish have a 30-second memory.
Ooh, it was your fish.
What?
What?
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, this is coincidental. So fish have a 30-second memory. And so I then like acted out the life of a fish, you know, and it was just something about like, oh, no. I explained that. And then I extrapolated that as to like, what would that be like if it was a person? And then it's like, I got to put some, you know, like, okay, I got to make some soup and then I got to call my whatever. And then like I would do things for 22 more seconds and then I would like lose. And then you'd go over to the microwave like, oh shit, somebody made me soup. And then I would do it again. And then it would get repeated like, somebody made me soup. Like that was like the punchline was that someone had made you soup.
Would you want to, if there's some kind of magical power, say what supposedly you can do in heaven is look back and see what exactly happened in all these situations. Would you want to see?
Well, there is a tape that exists that a friend of mine like blackmailed me with for a long time of one of those band shows. Like, cause I opened for him like two or three more times after that.
You were a hit.
And I have seen it. So I saw it in like semi-adulthood and it's like, it's bad, but it's not like the fucking worst thing ever. You know what I mean? Like what was the question though?
That's it. Like, would you want to be able to see all these shows and like, how did it really go? You know, almost like any conversation you've ever had. Did it happen the way I remember it?
Well, I do have a lot of tape of me early on, you know, like, cause I'd set up my camera and like, you know, cause people told me to do that and I'd, you know, go home and watch the set and whatever. Right. So
would you, when you worked at the comedy club, how often did you heckle?
Never. But I was surprised, like you had mentioned, my first night working at the comedy club, like I'd take out the trash and but like I'd have to be in the showroom periodically to like take out the garbage or whatever. And I would see and I'd watch like the last 20 after last call, there was nothing to do until everybody left and I'd have to pick fucking cigarette butts out of a urinal.
Right.
So I would watch the last 20 minutes of the show. And then literally on night two, I was like fucking blown away. It was the exact same thing. I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. This guy just like, I think everybody is surprised by that the first time they realize it's a trick. You know?
I feel like I didn't realize it until I was in New York City and I'm doing everything touristy. And that included some big show at Caroline's. And it was Judy Gold and Taylor Negron. He's dead now, but he played the bad guy in The Last Boy Scout.
Right.
And she did her half hour, whatever it was. Then he did his, whatever it was. And then I'm like, all right, let's see him do this again for the second show. And I'm like, well, you said all of this.
Wait, so you stuck around for the second show to see like, what do they got for the next show?
Yeah, right. I bet the dirty stuff comes out
right
now.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
the exact same stuff, except he goes first.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, it's a trick.
Yeah.
What was it like your first time at the club performing?
They weren't very nice. Not the customers, the guys who ran the Funny Bone, they were kind of like mean guys who, They had the Pittsburgh Funny Bone was the original Funny Bone. And so more or less they were the guys who kind of, they were like one of the early people on the scene at the beginning of the boom or whatever, okay. You know? So like Dennis Miller started there and like Mario Joyner started at that club. Like not a lot of comics, but like a couple of.
Right.
So, and they were kind of like one of the legendary clubs that used to like pay guys in Coke or whatever, you know, like it was like one of those old, you know, like old fucking road haunts. And,
can you imagine whenever it's like the scene changed and it's like, yeah, you get the two free drinks. Motherfucker was cocaine yesterday.
Yeah.
It's a
yeah.
new world.
Well, that's kind of the thing is like they didn't like the new, like when I started in 98, like that, all that shit was over, you know?
Right.
And all these like dinosaurs that were still around in the business were like, oh, what are you even bothering starting for? You know, it's wow. done. You know, like that was right. kind of like, because like they would, and they would tell these fucking crazy stories that like just didn't make sense to your brain. That it was like, in like 1984, I was an MC and I had three apartments. Like I had a place in Vegas and one in LA and one in New York. It was like, as an MC, you know, like, it, like, and I was MCing at the time making $75 for the week, you know? Right. But at the time, I guess it paid incredibly in the 80s or whatever. So, yeah. So anyway, so yeah, so they were not really particularly encouraging. And like I had to kind of like fight them to be on stage there and right. stuff a lot. They were like real kind of shitty about it. And that's why anytime I hear like I meet a comic that has like it comes from one like Acme in Minneapolis. There's a bunch of clubs that like that have like a real supportive, nurturing environment where right. they like are real nice to their comics and everything. And
you can't respect that.
Yeah. It's always like, what the fuck? That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, cause like I would go and like everybody there was acting like we were on the Titanic, you right. know? And we're just like, oh, what are you bothering for? Like, you know, like it's,
what
it's,
did the audience think of your first few times?
I mean, I think I wouldn't be here if it didn't go fine. Like, I think I was kind of one of the, obviously not at first, but like, I think I kind of quickly became like one of the decent guys on the Pittsburgh comedy scene, you know, like I kind of got into the sort of cool group sort yeah. of early on, you know?
When did you get a job, a gig, a road something or a credit that you were like, all right, I'm doing the right thing. This is a step. This is a milestone. This is what I wanted.
Well, I mean, there's been several. Like, even the first paid week I did as an MC at the Funny Bone was a big deal to me. I still literally have the check. I oh, have really? It. It's hanging on my wall in my office it. In LA.
Yeah,
oh, no, it. I did. I photocopied it, oh, okay. right? So, but I have the copy of the check.
How much framed. Is it for?
It's for $120 is All what right. it was for. Yeah, so. But they spelled my name wrong, which I think is like exactly how that club operated. Sure. You know, it was like, of course you spelled my fucking name wrong on my first check ever. But
that's so that you get excited when they spell your name right.
Yeah.
Another milestone.
It's right. like being your name on the wall of you know, the Comedy Store or something.
But no, getting live at Gotham on Comedy Central, I think, was like the first time where I was like, I did it. Like,
was that your first TV gig?
Actually, it wasn't, but there were two in quick succession, and it was the first like stand up I did on TV. Like right before that, I hosted some movie night on AMC once, where like. I was like, tonight we're watching whatever, you know, like I somehow got that job. And so I did that. And then like a week, 2 weeks later, I got Live at Gotham. So I was like, oh wow, we're really rolling now. Cause I had like two dumb TV credits. It happened to coincidentally be the same week when I found that out. I remember exactly where I was when I got the call that I was doing Live at Gotham. And it was in Birmingham, Alabama. And I was sitting in my car and it's the exact same club we were just talking about before with Finnegan on the other show. That
you shut the fuck up I know, about I'm that just, other show. Well,
anyway.
Jesus. So how did you do
it? Oh, but there was one thing that was kind of funny about that. Is like I auditioned for it for Live at Gotham. And I remember this vividly because I was on the road doing just like shitty road stuff, like one-nighters and weekend, you know, bullshit little clubs or whatever. And I had the way it was timed is that I was in West Virginia and I had to go to wherever what's the big school? Purdue? Where's Purdue?
Okay.
That's a big school, right?
It's a chicken.
It's your thing, the chicken yeah. company.
No, but it is a university, right?
Yes.
Purdue. Yeah.
Yeah.
So wherever that is, I think it's in like Illinois or okay. something.
That's far.
And so I had to go from West Virginia to Illinois to do this gig.
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking it up?
Yep.
You are. Okay. Where is it? It is.
Lafayette, Indiana.
That's exactly right. So I had to go from whatever, Wheeling, West Virginia to there. So that is like, what, 5 hours or something like that. But whatever, that's not a big deal. It's like a show, like it was like I had a night to get there. And so it was going to be fine. But then in the meantime, I got this audition to audition for back at Gotham in New York. So suddenly what I had to do is get off stage in West Virginia, drive all the way through the night back to New York City. I got to the club like right basically before the show. I like all my shit was still in the car. I just had to change in my car. Went up, did the audition, and then immediately got back in the car.
That you got paid with.
Yeah. Well, at the time I was like chain smoking cartons of cigarettes, which like got me through long. So I literally had to turn around, get back in my car and drive all the way to Lafayette, Indiana from New York. Like, so I had to do this insane triangle instead. But
when the timing works out and you're less stressed, are you excited? Like, yeah, I just did that. I'm on the fucking
road. Well, I was, but I was still like, yeah. I did think like, yeah, I was like, I think I remember like, kind of slipping it into the other comic in Purdue, like, oh, I had to swing by New York and do an audition for Comedy Central, no big deal or whatever. But the reason I remember it is because there's a comic named Augie Smith who's great. Mm-hmm. And like, I've known him, I knew him on the road, I knew him then. And more or less, he was just like a road guy, didn't live in New York. He eventually moved to New York for a while, but at the time, he was unfamiliar with New York. I happen to be living here doing the road. So I'd been to Gotham before. Like I knew the vibe and whatever. Yep. The way they always schedule these auditions, it was like a Tuesday and there was like fucking 11 people at this fucking audition for Comedy Central. So it was like Comedy Central executives in the back and 11 people. It was like a fucking horrible show, but they just wanted to see your jokes, I guess, or whatever. But so Augie went up and he was like, at the time, you know, that show, Bob and Tom, that radio show, he was like a big name on there. So like, he'd like fucking sell out clubs in the Midwest and he got asked to do this audition. So he went in and he went on right before me, like, and he was so pissed that there were only 11 people. And the way he was doing his act was that like, he's a lot higher energy than I am. Right. So he was like trying to do these big energy jokes for 11 people. And they would kind of sit there halfway through his audition. He had like a fucking meltdown. Like he's a friend of mine. Like I know him and he would tell you that like, he was just like, you know what? This is New York fucking city with this big fucking comedy club. And I'm doing audition. Like fuck this or whatever he said. He just basically told them to go fuck themselves, threw the mic down. And then William Stevenson was the MC. He like literally picked the microphone up off the ground and in one motion was like, your next comic's Jesse Joyce. Oh. So like, that's how I had to go. Like, I was like, oh man, why the fuck did he? And like Augie stormed off. But then I had to drive to Indiana. So I didn't think anything of it. I'm on the road that whole next week. I drive from Indiana down to Alabama, which is where I told you I forget where I was. I was somewhere that week. I'm on the road and Augie calls me and he goes, hey, so did you get it? And I was like, what? He was like, the audition, did you hear? And I was like, no. And he was like, well, I did. Oh. He got the show. And I was like, I hadn't heard. And I was like, oh, that's good for you or whatever. And I got the phone. I was like, what in the fuck? Like, I was like so furious.
Is it a test? And I wasn't supposed to be a sucker and do my whole set?
Yeah. It like made me crazy because I couldn't imagine. Like, I thought I did okay, you know, and like, he basically like pissed in their face and they like, and
we
and
love so it. Then, it's so New York.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, literally an entire calendar week went by and the following Tuesday they called me. And so I guess what they were doing is like booking the show week to week, you know, like, so then it was like the following week they booked me to do it. So suddenly there was like justice in the universe, but there was like this 7-day window where I was like, just like fucking living in my car in like, you know, Kentucky, just like, what in the fuck am I doing? Like, what did I do wrong or whatever? So I remember that really sticking out to me.
I went to New York Comedy Club one time and they made it seem like it was a regular show and it was a trick for it to be a bringer show later, but you were doing an audition and I was with my friend Chris and he was terrible. He didn't plan anything. He was horrible. I thought I did okay. Then he calls me and goes, yeah, they called me back. I passed. I'm in the club. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
This is impossible.
Yeah.
And later my call comes. But then I'm like,
well, but you did. This? Yo, same exact thing. You did get called later.
But also it shows me it means nothing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I guess I should have thought of it that way. They're like, oh, yeah, I guess you can blow an audition. It didn't occur to me at the time.
What about what was the biggest thing you got where you could relax? You now are a comic. You feel good. You maybe quit your job. And you don't have to worry about a regular job. I know you were a waiter for a while.
Yeah. I feel like that is like the biggest, fallacy in stand-up, that there is a day you get to tell your boss to fuck off, you know? Like, every comic before they, who's not a working professional comic, has this fantasy in their head that one, there's going to be a day where they get to go, well, I did it. You know, like, go fuck yourself, boss. Like, not coming in tomorrow or whatever. But they're like, that's crazy. And I feel like I saw that happen once. There was some open micer who I was like headlining some club, and there was like local guys, and he came in and he was like, I did it, gang. I told my boss to go fuck himself or whatever. And we were like those of us who were like working comics, right, were like, see if you can get your job back. Right. You know, like, don't, what have you done? Like, don't do that. Like, I feel like what it is, it's like such a, because it's a cooler story. Like, it sounds like a show businessy that like one day I was at, but it's this underwhelming gradual thing that where you just basically have to like supplement your income with less and less other shit.
Until the next thing you know, you don't have the job anymore.
Yeah, you don't realize. I feel like the way it works for like any real professional comic is you don't know you're a full-time professional comic for the first 6 months. Right. You know, where all of a sudden you're on the road, it occurs to you like, oh yeah, I haven't had to fucking call in shifts at this thing for 6 months. I guess that means...
When you think about it, that is how it happened to us with podcasting. We were doing kids' parties and you kind of take the gigs. And the more we had to do with podcasting, the less gigs we took at kids' parties. And all of a sudden, we were in the middle of a marathon show and it's like 70-something hours. And I realized I forgot about going to a party.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm no longer going to answer this phone.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's over.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to deal with this anymore.
Of course. And like, I just feel like that's like the real way it happens. It's like less glamorous than the story where you, you know.
Yeah. That kid now is an adult. Killed his whole family 5 years ago. Anyways. But yeah, you're probably like pissing in a urinal and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I didn't even go for that gum.
Yeah.
I'm going to wash my hands and leave. I did it. Feels real good. Yeah. Everybody has that fantasy, right? Go fuck yourself. Take this job and shove it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I swear to God, it just doesn't exist. You just like suddenly don't have to do other bullshit anymore. Right.
What gig were you most excited about? Like, I'm calling my family.
Oh, huh. Oh, I don't know.
Did you ever call them? Were they ever excited?
Yeah, waiting for a call.
No, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like I've done like a lot of stuff that was like really cool. Like I did this whole tour of Asia where I like did stand up in China and Malaysia and Singapore and the Philippines and everything like that. That was like a pretty neat thing to do where I like headlined the whole tour, you know, and whatever.
Was it a big deal to start working with Greg Giraldo?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, clearly, yes. But like but I guess what threw me is the question that I called my parents. Like, my parents wouldn't have understood. My parents are not comedy club people. Like,
I'll tell you, when I was doing kids' parties, I would call my parents when I got a big tip.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't know, what else am I going to tell you?
Right.
How are you going to, how do I quantify that I just did a great Pocahontas?
Yeah.
Well, I told my parents, I said, well, when I was in fifth grade, I said, I want to be Batman. Uh-huh. And everybody made fun of me. Well, here I am.
Well, guess what?
Batman. And Spider-Man and Elmo and the Easter Bunny and Dora.
That's how Christian Bale should have delivered that line. Guess what? I am Batman.
Guess what? I am Batman. told ya.
Yeah. That really needs to be a contraction. It sounds really dumb if it's not, if it's I am Batman. Like, it's just I'm. Just shorten it.
Guess what? I am the Batman.
But just real quick to give due diligence, like if in my personal, yes, like to me, when I started going on the road with Giraldo and he would like compliment me on a joke or give me a tag to a joke, like, yeah, that absolutely, I feel like that really entrenched it for me where I was like, oh, okay, like I should be doing this because like the guy who was my favorite comic like likes me enough to bring me on the road with him and thinks that I'm good at this. So yeah.
Yeah, that's such a big deal. He was like my top guy.
Yeah.
How often would you sit down with Greg Giraldo and say, look, we're at this point, we're friends now. Somehow I got my life together. Don't ask. I'm not trying to preach, but stop it, Greg.
Yeah. Like a lot. We talked about sobriety constantly because like that's.
And what does he say? Like, you're right. I'll try.
No, I mean, he like, it was never like that. Like it was always like, he agreed with me. He liked being sober, you know, like, right. And, when we both were sober, we'd go, it was like really kind of a good time. We'd fucking go just dick around in some town and go to the, whatever, like the, you know,
the local
Dallas Book Depository and see the Kennedys at, like, you know, like, or whatever.
Then we go corn maze.
Yeah, wander around a mall or some shit, like, and we just joke around and it was,
we
and,
just fuck around a little Holocaust museum.
Yeah, yeah.
Sneak in there, fuck yeah. About.
And he, yeah, he would go like, you know, like, this is kind of great. Like he would kind of get right. Like little glimpses of it. But he, like, for me, it was so much clearer why I was getting so, like, I saw more immediate benefits. Like I was doing nothing. Like I was doing shitty one nighters and getting DUIs when I was a drunk. Then suddenly I'm sober and like I get on TV and now I'm working with Greg. And like, so to me, I was like, I have to, like, this is working for me, you know? Whereas he was like already at a level where like it was not as clear to him what the benefits were beyond just not drinking. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, but then we got into like several fights about it when he was like, cause then suddenly I wouldn't hear from him for like 5 days and I go like, ah, fuck, he's like off the rails again, you know? Yeah. And then, yeah, there was like a time we were in a, you know, parking lot in Columbus, Ohio, and like almost got into a fight cause he was like going to miss his plane the next day and whatever, like just shit like that, you know, like, yeah. So we talked about it quite a lot, but anyway.
Bet you blew it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, sure. I dropped the ball.
No. Do you have to take another comic under your wing now? Like a pay it forward or something?
So what advice would you give to you as an earlier comic?
Huh?
You specifically.
Yeah. You know, this is kind of a funny story if I can. So one of the first comics I ever worked with. So because I started when I was like relatively young by stand-up standards, you know, I was, you know, 18 or 19. I was doing stand-up at my college. Like I was like the only comic there, right? So I would get to open for whoever came through because like I was the only comedian that the college knew. So I worked with Fallon before he did he had just gotten Saturday Night Live. Okay. And like I opened for him and it was like kind of a cool, like he was like older than me, but like, oh, this is like a young guy. He's like got some shit going on, you know, like
he's doing all his impressions, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like all songs to the troll or whatever did. Yeah. So, and then, but the first guy I got to work with was Mark Curry, you know, him from Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Sure.
So I remember like thinking like, that was like a huge deal for me. Cause he was like the first like guy who'd been on TV that I'd worked with. Like, like I'd done the Funny Bone with like some dude who still had like an Arsenio jacket, you know, but like some dude who was like a fucking TV star, you know? Right. And so after the show, like he couldn't have been cooler to me. Like I basically like was like, what, I want to be a comedian. I want to move to New York. Tell me what I need to know. And he gave me like he was like so cool. He gave me like the greatest advice. Like he sat there and talked to me for like an hour or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, essentially like, it's the same advice I would give myself, that I'd give any comic. And it's basically like, wait until you feel like you're the best dude in your town, right? Like get good at comedy there. Like where you basically have gotten to the point where you have made all your stupid mistakes in like a place where it doesn't really matter, right. You know, and then move to New York or LA, because then you're really only competing against like the kid who did that from Chicago and the kid who did that from Baltimore and whatever. Right. But also when you feel like you're that guy, get the fuck out. Right. Because otherwise you're going to end up becoming like the local morning radio guy. You know, like you don't want to be like too big a fish. You don't want to be the big fish in your stupid town forever because
you'll enjoy it and forget that you do need to move
and
higher.
And when you do get to New York, nobody gives a shit about that. And you will be unwilling to start over and like, you know, basically like suck it up as much because like, well, I'm kind of an important person in my dumb town. You know, right. So like, why don't I just go back there? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That is the thrust of what he told me. And he was very nice about it. And I remember like being so sort of inspired by that. Like I went home and I wrote it all down. And I more or less did that with my whole life. Like I was like, I'm not even going to seek a second opinion. This makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so in essence, I like literally took Mark Curry's advice and I did all of those things. I stuck around Pittsburgh for like 3 years and it got to the point where I was kind of like the best dude there. So I moved to New York. Right. I've always wanted to thank Mark Curry for like taking the time to be so nice and sit down with me
you
and
guys
explain all
this
that.
At him.
What's that? No. Wait, hang on. There's more of the story.
He said, what the fuck are you talking about?
So
that wasn't me. You were drunk.
That was 20 years ago. Or no, it was like 18 years ago, whatever. So 10 years after that, I was at the TBS Comedy Festival in Las Vegas, right? And I was performing there, and I go in the green room, and there's fucking Mark Curry. And I was like, oh my God, like, I've been waiting to fucking thank this guy for like a decade, right? And so I go over to him, and I go, hey man, you will never remember this in a million years, but when I was like super young, I got to open for you at my college. And he goes, Pittsburgh, right? And wow. I was like, yeah. And he goes, I bet you want to know why I know that, right? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to know why you know that. And he's like, because I had a date that night and you wouldn't shut the fuck up asking me comedy questions. You followed me around for like an hour. I was trying to lose you. You chased me to my car and were asking me fucking stupid comedy advice. And so I just told you whatever the fuck I could think of to get you to shut up and leave me alone. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, that is not how I picture it at all. Like, I'm sure that's how that happened. I am positive that he's right and that is the way it went. But I swear to God, even when I was telling you the first half of that story, in my head, I imagine us sitting on the edge of the stage together and him like explaining comedy to me. But that's not at all. Like, what that's genuinely funny. Happened is I was like this excited puppy chasing him around campus and trying to get him to fucking tell me more comedy things.
That's adorable. And, yeah.
You tell him, well, isn't that cute? Whatever happened, that's good advice. So keep it, Mark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And by the way, I like told that piece. I then like when I started like working as a comic, I was like, well, let me tell you what Mark Curry told me once. Like I espouse that advice to other people. And it's good advice. Like he genuinely did give me legit advice. But I was like, you know, I structured my entire life around that Chase said to me. And he's like, well, I'm glad I at least told you legitimate information.
Well, I mean, check out the tattoo on my shoulder.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But anyway.
And now him and that girl are married.
Right. Yeah. So really, for real, like the advice that I would give is that. Because it worked for me. It suited me well, you know?
Right.
Oh, and then the one other thing, and this is like, it's weird to give myself advice because like I think like I don't know, I'm kind of doing it sort of, so I don't know.
Okay.
But like to anybody is like, don't throw away anything that you think is funny, because if you think it's funny, you're right, it is. If you are a professional comedian now, like anything that you thought was funny was, you just weren't ready to do it then, you know?
Right, which is hard to do because there is something freeing about purging something where it's like, no, I don't know how this is gonna ever turn into something, and maybe it's also an excuse.
Uh-huh.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, because editing is tough and finding it's well, like put the it concept away. Is good.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, of course.
You put it away for a while. Like there are so many jokes that I do or did in the last couple like I thought of 3 years into comedy and I tried it and ate shit and I tried it 2 years later and ate shit and I tried it a year after that and ate shit and I tried it 4 years after that and ate shit and I tried it, you know, a year after that and ate shit and I tried it 3 weeks after that and it worked. Right. You know what I mean? So it's like you're just a lot of times not ready to do the joke, you know?
Think about how many Aerosmith songs we'll never hear, right?
That's true.
They didn't record. They were all high because they were being paid in coke in 1972. Dude, congratulations on all your success. You're a big part of my sobriety. I realized, hey, take a look that the smartest people I know happen to be quitting.
Oh, and I went, that's nice.
Let's be smart.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
That means a lot.
You're a big reason why I smoke pot, so.
thank you guys very much. Here's a song. You ready? What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com. Mm-hmm.